my character creation, I my character creation needed to be under an hour. Like, a person can create a character, a comprehensive character, like with their own spin, their own philosophy, their own feel to it, under an hour.
Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of Media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am Nikki P. here, as always. My guest today is Mr. Randall Harris. How are you doing today, Randall?
Feeling great, actually. It's a beautiful Friday morning.
It's probably a little bit warmer than I like it to be, but that's the general state of things here in Ohio right now. It's always a little warmer than I want it to be.
it's starting to feel like fall up here in New Hampshire. So,
and you guys have beautiful falls up there. There's somewhere floating around up there. There's a cell phone that, you know, we paid $1,500 for that flew off the roof of a car when we were traveling. Someday I'll forgive my wife for that, but
hey, you probably blessed somebody, to be honest. You know, just like, oh, look, a phone.
I think it's somewhere off the side of one of the White Mountains, so I don't know if it made it.
Probably just pissed off a moose.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of you. You're not going to be the first person creating a game on the show, but I think you're the first doing like an actual tabletop RPG kind of game. So start getting the background on how you kind of got into this whole world.
Yeah, right on. It started a long time ago. It started like in high school, with just a couple of buddies of mine, naturally. And we all started playing like D&D second edition, aging myself a little bit. But and they were all like one-off campaigns that you know, didn't really lead anywhere. The longest campaign I've had at that time was probably like 3 weeks. But then, you know, I was introduced to my first love, Vampire the Masquerade. And just the feel of it, the flow, you know, it was the '90s. So vampires were just all the rage, you know, it was the trench coat era. So, you know, if you can be like a blade, you know, in real time, then like sign me up twice. And that was pretty much it. I started playing Vampire the Masquerade throughout my high school career, and I carried it into college. And I got confident enough to actually start running campaigns. And the longest campaign I've actually had was about close to 6 months, kind of borderline 7 months, which is
pretty hefty campaign.
Yeah.
Keeping people around to play that long is pretty impressive.
For sure. Especially, you know, especially college kids running around doing God knows what. But no, it was really cool. And there's always been like an apprehensiveness, to extend the invitation to have people to play, because I know how tabletop RPGs work. You kind of need a Sherpa in order to actually, you know, to get into it, you know? But I extend the invitation to my girlfriend at the time, And she was just like, to my surprise, she was just like, yeah, you know what? Why not? Let's do this. You guys seem to be having a good time. You know, there's drinks. Yeah, let's sign me up. Put fangs in me. And I was like, all right, cool. And you know, she was a part of that, the really long campaign, the long stretch. And she had a blast. And you know, after every session, I asked him, you know, anything I can improve, yada, the standard questions and whatnot. And she, every time I would ask that question, there would be something. She would say something, but then she would just, everything was great. Until the tail end, then the story end. And I was just like, hey, how's everybody like the campaign? Everybody was high-fiving, you know, cracking beers and everything like that. Woo, we killed the big bad. Let's do this. And I was just like, all right, so like feedback. And she was like, you know what? It was very, very hard to get into the game. Like, it was very difficult to actually understand the rules, the mechanics. Character creation was a nightmare. Like, she was just like, honestly, there was several times where I almost just was like, you know what? I much rather do something else. And I was like, well, how long did you feel that way? And she was like, honestly, it was probably till I didn't really get into it until like the third week. And that's when things start making sense and everything like that. And I was like, oh, you could have asked questions. She was like, I did. She's like, I was asking questions. She's like, I end up like when you were asleep, taking the book and reading the book just so I can get more of a firm grasp on it, just to play. And it really dawned on me that like most of the tabletop RPGs are like that. Most of the AAA tabletop RPGs are like that.
Especially if you started at AD&D second edition, I mean.
Right.
Well, that's where I started. And I mean, that's we started with the heavy of like mechanics that are maybe make less sense to anyone who just doesn't like mechanics.
Exactly. And on top of that, just explaining the general like vibe of role playing and tabletop and dice rolling and everything like that. It's really a lot for a person to get into, you know?
Out of curiosity, so I know with like I played the New World of Darkness games, which wasn't Vampire the Masquerade, it was just Vampire at that point. Out of curiosity, so were they playing with like the sanity system and all that stuff in the previous versions? Yeah, then that right there is just enough to complicate things beyond belief for anyone who's not used to those games.
So I tweaked it a bit so that it's a little bit more user friendly. There were we didn't really count like instead of like doing like you know Diablerie and like understanding the relationships between the clans and everything like that. It was very story focused and story heavy. There was guardrails up, you know. But you know, that being said, it was really eye opening when she was like, you know, it took me a minute to get into it just to play the game. And you're right. You know, we both started with, you know, AD&D. And so like,
Thacko.
Oh my God.
Explain that to anyone who's not initiated. And
you explain it to me. That's like, I just had PTSD, like, right. Like, but yeah, you know, and between AD&D and Vampire to transition to third edition to Vampire the Masquerade, you see that you're like, oh, these rules actually aren't really that draconian. It just takes some getting used to. But like from an outside looking in, there's like, if I didn't have a teacher to show me Vampire the Masquerade, there's no way I would be able to take it off the shelf and be like, you know what? Let's do this. Let's deep dive into this. I had to have a person hold my hand.
I have a little game called Arkham Horror on the shelf over here. You can talk to that one.
Oh, man.
I remember I have a buddy of mine who brought that back from the game store. The guy's like, it's funny. Like, don't expect to win the first 100 times you play it.
Sign me up.
Just the rule system itself is so I don't even know. I to this day don't know if I've ever actually played with all of the rules and played them right, because some of them are so weird.
That's so crazy. That's so, it took me, honestly, it took me probably 6 to 7 plays to actually like get through a game of House of Haunted Hill. And just because it's just so, there's so many, like, and don't get me wrong, I love it. In that game, the complexity is all about the general gameplay. And sometimes, the mechanics and the intricacies of the mechanics, like, mesh well with the general gameplay, it provides the spice, for that. But like when there's certain games that are geared towards the veterans like us, and there's very few like starter games and starter campaigns, and the ones that are out there, they're one shot campaigns, or they're GURPS, and.
Or card games, things like that.
Exactly. It's just like, I want to get into board games. And you just slide Munchkin towards them, and they're just like, what is this?
It's a good place to start, is what that is.
It is. These are called training wheels. But I was like, there has to be a game that is very heavily fantasy driven, very story driven, has a robust history and lore, but also really easy to play and really easy to get into, and not just easy to play, but like easy to DM, to facilitate, to set up, to character create and everything like that. And I scoured the earth and I couldn't find a thing. So I was like, you know what? Let's make it. And so I started my company.
Brings us to.
Oh, the transition. Hey.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about Alam. It's Alam there, right?
Yeah, it's Alam. I created a company called Backpack Universe Games. And it started out, Alam wasn't actually my first game. My first game was a game that I made with my partner, Antonio Perdue. He has his own company, Roswell Enterprise, and we were bored out of our minds, like on our fifth zombie movie. And he was just like, oh my God, these guys, they all make the same dumb mistakes. And he was just like, you know what? I wish there was like a game. And I was like, you know what? It's 5 in the morning. We have nothing to do. So let's make it. And so we made like a very like it started out very slapdash tabletop RPG about zombies, and it blossomed into this really cool, really in depth like zombie game called LBHV, Life of a Biohazard Victim, and we created different types of zombies and monsters and creatures like that. But that got shelved, for just personal reasons. A lot of things were happening in our lives. And so I started thinking and like writing about like high fantasy. Alam is a high fantasy steampunk tabletop RPG. With various aspects of things that I fell in love with when I was a kid. I mean, there's something about like, there's something about, like summoning like a giant lightning, like cloud and whatnot to just strike and explode a trolley that was like, that's like, you know, headed towards, like towards a district, or just blending, like deep fantasy, like woods and forests with like, with, you know, mechanical engineering. And there's something about that kind of aesthetic that's really pleasing to me. And I haven't seen something like that done really well. Well, there's Arcane, and Arcane's pretty good. But it just in general, having that kind of aesthetic and having that kind of like background and world building, was really pleasing to me. So the first thing I did before I even put anything to, before I put the pen to paper, is I was like, okay, this has to be user friendly. A person has to be able to see the art, see the cover, and be like, okay, take it off the shelf, read it, and boom, I can invite four friends and we can start rolling dice and slaying monsters within an hour and a half, you know? And so like that was really paramount to actually creating the game. And then I just put my own spice to it, you know?
So what do you declare kind of like your own spice? What's the thing that makes it distinctly you? I'm curious.
So the characters that I created are very unique, but they have a familiarity. Oh my god. they're very familiar to people who are into like high fantasy and everything like that. You know, there's elves and there's like but like my personal spice that I added to it was the dynamic of the race in there, because there's elves, but there's three types of elves. There's the common elves called the Vorsor, the high elves called the Magi, and the woodland kind of elves called the Grawl, and they all stemmed from one family and broke off and did their own thing. In the hierarchy of elves, there's nine houses, and they all send down like rules and rule from on high. There's the Orotho, who pretty much keep to themselves. They do not interact with anyone else. They are only interested in expanding, like very, very, very like expansionist kind of tribe. There's the Kraven, which loosely based off of a mixture of like, oh my god. So like the Kraven they're probably my favorite. I love all my babies, but like they're probably my favorite just in sheer design. Because they're nomadic, but they all have different tribes, and they all follow a set amount of like nomadic rules. And when one tribe like, you know, finds another, they say hello through combat, pretty much.
Okay. It's feeling very like gypsy to me, like those kind of people.
There's camaraderie there, you know, there's several other races, and humans are basically non-existent. They were there, and then a thing happened, and now there are two forms of humans. There are the Shikamori, who are the humans that are in a, they're in the desert. And their city is called the Raphael, which is a massive city that has giant like crab legs. And whenever there's like heavy storms or like a really bad like mono storm that's happening in the desert, the legs retract and they extend a mass and they ride the the winds of the storm. And then there's the DDA, the Doma de Agua. And they are the remnants of what remains of the human kingdom. And the only reason why they survived is because they were out in the water. they were far enough away from the catastrophe to not be affected. And they are their role is we welcome everyone. Like everyone can fly underneath the banner of the boar. There's just a bunch of other races and everything like that.
Well, I thought we were getting rid of the complexity and the need to read like entire manuals and family histories, bro. That was the idea.
Well, like, and that's the thing. Like the complexities is not in the story. The complexities are in the mechanics. And that's when people like are kind of like there's like a barrier. That's when I was just like, okay, let's have a very simple gameplay mechanic, but also scratch that min-max itch, you know? My mechanics are very simple. A D12, you know, does everything pretty much. The beauty about, you know, let me back up. My character creation, my character creation needed to be under an hour. Like a person can create a character, a comprehensive character, like with their own spin, their own philosophy, their own feel to it, under an hour. They can have their abilities, they can have, you know, their perks, their racial benefits and bonuses. All of that can be calculated within. Right now, the longest time it actually took, and this is like for children, that's between the age of 10 and 12, they took probably like 30 minutes, 40 minutes to create a really cool, comprehensive character.
So I kind of have to ask the question because of the era that we're in, you know, and the big push, like racial bonuses. And you actually do have differences between different types of characters, not pretending that everyone is great at everything at all times and all that.
Oh, yeah, no. So,
I mean, I understand the ethos that drives that, but at the same time, like, let's take all the spice out of life by doing that. Like,
oh, seriously. No, that's what boils down to every campaign is everyone's like a walking forearm that can just one shot everything. One of the things that I really enjoy about tabletop RPGs is that you can actually build a party that's really diverse. And can specialize in one or two things, but you always get that person that's just like, oh man, I made a cleric and I kind of want to be a cleric.
Clerics are awesome, but they're hard to play. They're kind of boring to play.
Facts, you're not wrong.
Let's just heal everybody in the party again.
I'll be back here. and so like that's. And that was really, honestly, that was me. I was that guy that I would pick a character and you're like, and after several plays, I'm just like, oh, I'm not really feeling it. So in the game, so you essentially can play and be whatever role you want, whatever role you and your party need, you can be. And that's done by ways of weapon swapping. You get all of your abilities by equipping a weapon and then playing with that weapon and unlocking abilities.
Okay, that's cool. That's an interesting mechanic.
And the maximum amount of abilities you can equip is 6. But between battles and between dungeons and raids, you can interswap those abilities. So if you want to make a sword and board, like, you know, tank that can also like back up and hurl SUV sized fireballs at the battlefield, you can do that. No one will ever be shoehorned into a position, because potentially everyone can play every position. Now, that being said, because again, we just talked about like walking forearms and everything like that, everyone has the potential to earn and build and create and have every ability in the game. There's over 160 abilities in the game. So you have the ability to learn every single one. It's going to take you a very, very long time, but you are essentially building your character exactly how you want it to be. Every character is like a personal fingerprint and thumbprint. It's personal to you, and it will be just like how you want to play it. You know that, but again, your party will dictate how, like, what character is needed and what character isn't. So if you're just like, man, we kind of got spanked last battle. We really, really, really need a tank, or we really need a healer or something like that. Somebody can be like, okay, I'll drop this weapon. I'll pick up this weapon and I'll start learning magic.
Without trying to get myself too far on this, because we have to shift a little bit. But so, you know, when you say weapons, is it always weapons, or is it like utility? Like, would a cleric be kind of like a med kit and the level of expertise you develop with the med kit? Is it always a weapon?
It's always a weapon. And the reason why I made it always a weapon is because there, you're going to have people that really would like break the system, and by all means break this game. Like, I love it, but like it's the pacing of how the game is going to be broken. And so if they can only learn one thing at a time, because a person that's been, you know, doing bow and arrow for forever, like drops a bow and arrow and then picks up a staff, they're not going to know how to throw a fireball right off the bat. They're going to need practice. And so that's how they can learn, like different skills. And again, they can swap those skills whatever they need, they feel like they need to do. Also, there are team attacks in the game. So if you say that you have your sword and board, tank, and you're fighting like this giant, like ice golem or whatever, you and your partner can perform a team attack. Your partner can cast a spell, hit you, and then you can the one of the spells is called batter up. You flank the monster. One person rams into the monster, the other person hits the monster like a home run derby, the monster and everything like that. There's various team attacks in the game. There's probably 40 team attacks in the game, which also like helps you develop and makes your party very personable, you have to have communication. You're just like, oh, you know, your like my ability plus your ability would do this really cool ability, which is necessary for the party. And there's also fusion abilities where you can take one ability and another ability, combine those abilities together to form a bigger ability.
Well, I'm sold, man. I'm getting, where do I buy it? But,
oh man. So right now I'm working on my fourth book, and the way I actually designed the game, is, again, you would creating a character, you know, everybody would have one book and they would have to like pass the book around and, you know, somebody's just like, oh, you know, I'm waiting on my turn to create this character and yada, yada, yada. I have four small books in a book in a sleeve. So while somebody's working on, finding out their abilities, another person can be creating their character. While a person's creating their character, another person can be working on figuring out what race they want to be. When a person is working on finishing, like while a person can working on finishing their race, another person can be doing something. So like creation is always in a circle. No one's ever like left out being stagnant. And the four books are, first is the game mechanics and character creation. Second book is all about the races. Third book is all about the abilities. And the fourth book is five short story campaigns, intro campaigns that help DMs to facilitate campaigns. They're like small modules and they're radically different too. You have like a hack and slash module. You have like a module that does like detective work. You have a very political module that requires a lot of charisma and everything like that. So like a person can play a module and be like, all right, everyone responded really well with this. We can take that story, the ending of that story, and, you know, expand on it and so on, you know?
Well, that's awesome. Well, this is going to end up being a longer episode than I usually do because I'm too interested in what you're doing. Like I'm not wanting to push back. Like, oh, I like this. We'll be going with this. So at least we talked about it. We know how the people that play these games are. We know how the people that create these games are. Like, this is a particular type of person that tends to gravitate here. And when you say the word marketing to them, they kind of you get their hackles up like, ugh. But yeah. Unless you cross that bridge, you're never going to sell the thing. So I'm curious kind of how have you been working on getting the game out there in front of people?
When I first started this, like I had huge momentum. And I would do demos. And the first demo I had, like, I was just like, oh, I need a max of like 6-7 people. I had like 14 people show up and I was like, whoa, you know? And it was really, that's what I did, you know? And so it was relatively easy, for me to get my name out there. I talked to the owner of his venue. He was just like, okay, you know, here's a particular time or date. And you know, put the feelers out there and people will come. Second time I tried to do that, didn't really work out. I did get a lot of people, but like I got like 7, maybe 8. Third time I got 4. And fourth time I got like 4 again. Fifth time I got 3. And so I was like, I'm doing something wrong. You know, I'm getting my name out there, but my participation has like dropping. Yeah, exactly. And so what I've started to do was just hit different avenues. I realized that I was just going to one spot over and over again. And so I started going to different like comic book shops, like different venues and everything like that, putting my name out there, giving them my card, telling them about like the what time of the demos and everything like that. And that has been very, very transformative. Just in general, just like, because it's really easy, especially if you're not like, if marketing and putting your name out there, because I create, that's it. And I don't know anything about marketing. So I find a comfortable spot and I want to stay. The second I actually started going to different places and different avenues, that's when people started like coming in. I started getting a lot of emails and my website started getting a lot of clicks and everything like that.
Well, in marketing, what we would tell you, when you find something that works, just do more of that, you know. Or like if you've got an advertisement that's working, just keep throwing money at it until it stops working, and then cut off whatever flow, because the whims of the earth and the internet, they change. And so when you find something, why not exploit it as much as you can? So it's like, if you know you have a system that's working here, but like maybe you're pushing it too much at one place, well, just spread that around. You're not doing anything different other than just being in a different place. You know, it's just more of the same kind of thing. Now, when you said three of four books done so far with the game. So obviously the game itself is not completed out there ready yet, correct? When do you actually expect the game to be completed?
The game should be completed. Box and everything. I would say June 2025.
Okay. And I'm curious if you have any type of plan for marketing it online or getting it out to like a broader group of people. Are you trying to keep things kind of local? Like what's the idea? What's the goal?
So a very wise person told me to start building a fan base early, and so I was like, okay, how do I do that? And there was moments where I would like, I created a Twitch channel, and I would just load it up, put it on my Facebook, put it on my Instagram and like Snapchat or whatever. And just like, I'm working on my game from such and such to such and such. If anybody wants to come in and join and watch me do my stuff and nerd out for a bit, you know, you can. And that worked pretty well. I started creating newsletters and sending information out there and just doing little teasers and feelers of the game of Alam and just of my company in general. And that worked tremendously.
Keeping yourself in people's consciousness usually helps them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that I didn't know that, until my well was starting to run dry, you know?
Well, it's funny because I think we all learn that lesson at some point, but it's something you have to ask, why is this not intuitive? Because we all know how fickle we are with what we see on the internet. Like we're bombarded with so much every day that like we can very easily forget. Like you'll get this email in our box and it's like, it's been a couple months. I don't know when I signed up for that or why. I'm just getting rid of this thing. Like keeping people remembering you fresh in their minds, like, if they like you, they'll probably continue liking you, but you gotta make sure they don't forget why they liked you in the first place, kind of thing.
Right. And like in me as like, cause I, again, this is my first time actually like selling and being an entrepreneur. So I've always been like a consumer, and I'm very, 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 very aware of just being bombarded, you know? And like, I was like, you know, I don't want to do that, but there's a reason why that's done. You know, yes, you're going to reach the same people, you know, over and over again, but you're really looking for that one person, those two or three people, you know, that doesn't have the eye.
Well, the one thing I always try and focus on anytime I'm like, oh, am I bugging people too much? Is you got to remember, like, almost everything you do, with the exception of email, it's all through the algorithm. And the algorithm hates showing you to people. So, you know, you think, oh, I posted 10 times today. But they saw you twice.
That's solid. That's very true.
It's like, I just try to keep that in the back of my head. It's like, no matter how much I think I'm posting, they're not seeing what I'm posting most of the time. So, you know, just keep pushing, keep trying to get it out there. I'm curious, do you have like any involvement with like, you know, other game creators at all online? You have like a community of guys doing the same kind of stuff, or peers, you guess, that you kind of communicate with and hash ideas out with, things like that?
And so that I don't. There's a couple of my friends that are in this space, the tabletop RPG space, and you know, video game space and whatnot. And I bounce ideas off of them very rarely. But as far as like me being a part of community, I don't. And like I really should, because there's a YouTuber that it took me a while to get up the nerve to actually, you know, like send him an email and ask him very poignant questions. But once I did, oh man, it was awesome. I joined his Discord, and like I get a lot of feedback from his community. And because of that, because, you know, like I actually, you know, put myself out there. Like I'm like, it's helping me get my name out there, and it's helping me like hone my craft. But no, like I really should absolutely like be a part of a set amount of like indie creators who do this, because like they're really friendly and they're super cool, you know?
It's a select and a rarefied group of people that play games in the first place. So it's an even more select and rarefied group that creates games. And, you know, being a small group of people, you always want to talk about the thing you're excited about. So, man, those guys are never more excited than to talk to somebody who knows the ropes in it, you know?
That's true. You know, and so, like, but, like, we... when you said like we are like a very small, like small knit community, like I often ask myself why, you know, like why is like tabletop RPGs and board games such a very niche community?
Not enough homeschoolers. you laugh, yes. But all the homeschool families I know play D&D or whatever.
I mean, but like, you know, like not to go off in a tangent or anything like that, but like, honestly, if it wasn't for COVID, then like the tabletop industry like exploded because of COVID. And you know, the like tabletop RPGs became a thing, again, because like that's pretty much all you had.
Well, and then this might be part of like the issues in that industry, I will say, is like you're an old head like me. Like we've played these games with a lot of types of people a long time. But if you spend 10 minutes on like TTRPG Twitter, you'll want to blow your brains out. Like the vitriol from like the, you call it the woke camp, call it the conservative camp, and these people fighting each other. It's guys, we're all here to play games and have fun. Like, but everyone just wants to, like, they want to pour all of their being into this. And it's like, well, at the end of the day, guys, this is just games. Like, we.
Yeah. And like you'll have that. Absolutely. But like, so circling back to when me and my friend Tone started our zombie game, LBHV, we had people that were just like, ew, you know, like we were trying to explain to them the game. They're like, you mean like D&D? Ew. And we're like, no, okay, give it a try. You know, and they played it and they were like, wow, this is my first time playing something like this. I had a great time. And so, like, there's, I think that there's sort of like the gatekeeping is really, really real in those type of industries. And I think some games are designed very, they're designed very intricately for a reason. Like their targeted audience is us, the old heads. And so that's why they have like these very extravagant games that are very expensive.
Well, nothing more expensive than when you're like, don't get me wrong, I love White Wolf and the game. And one thing I really loved about it was modular. You could start with just the basic storyteller system and then add a book as you went. And every like new thing you wanted, a new set of rules you wanted to add to the core book, you could go and buy it. But then again, I have a hard drive full of White Wolf PDFs off of DriveThruRPG, and I've spent way too much money acquiring.
Oh man, you are talking to the man that not only drank the Kool-Aid, I opened several Kool-Aid stands and got other people. I have every offshoot book that did a deep dive to every like clan and every, oh my God, I had like offshoots, I had werewolf, I put so many people, I guarantee the CEO of like White Wolf was just like, that Randall Harris, thank you for the second yacht.
Well, for me, I always loved the SAS system. To me, it was a perfect system. I like the D10 rules, where it's just like the whole success is failures. It made chance a real part of the game, which I liked. Like, sometimes you just get unlucky with that. But it also made it feel like it wasn't so difficult that things would never happen, especially if you were smart about how you would set up your character. But like, I always actually ran Mortals campaigns. Like, I had fun with those, because like the campaign I was actually running is I had a guy who wanted to be a midget mob boss, and so I kind of used him as like the center of the game. And so I was almost running like a film noir kind of thing. And the idea was I'd actually created rules for doppelgangers for the system. And was working up into a world where like doppelgangers existed, but they're like, the idea was that they're kind of like genetic freaks where their DNA couldn't hold stable, so you needed to introduce new DNA for them to copy.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
but in that same system, like I had a friend who ran a vampire game, and he decided the idea was that he wanted to run the game started on a boat. One of the, we'll say, we wasn't maybe the Mayflower, but during that time period, and we just happened to be vampires on a boat coming to the new world as like the colonies were about to be created. And so like the depth and variation you could get in that game, like it was always loved it. But as much as I like that, I the system that you kind of created with like the weapons, like, that to me just sounds so interesting. And like the ability to, if you can keep a character alive, to be able to like make the character what you need it to be as time progresses is very interesting.
Yeah. So one of the things I really enjoyed about Vampire Masquerade is that you can make a character, and that character is through and through an individual. And that character will always be unique, you know, and like, but, you know, the character, as far as powers go, or your supernatural abilities, your character is on a train track, and they will not deviate. They cannot deviate from that track. And so, to fully customize your character is to fully customize your character. To say that, you know, like I want to, because like. And you know, this happened to me a while ago when, you know, in my adult life, I tried to, you know, join a campaign, and there was three of us, And then there was two of us. And then there was three of us again. And then there was four of us. And this was playing, we're playing fifth edition. And I was like, my character's kit was designed for three people. And now there's five. And now there's three again. And so like to be able to fluctuate, but keep your character alive and keep your character fresh is really paramount towards, you know, like enjoying and loving a game.
Well, right on, Randall. Sorry. Thanks so much.
No, don't. Randy's good, man.
That's in my head from 20 years ago. That's still how I remember you. It's like, oh, it's Randy over.
Oh no! It's taken me so like long, like not to call you like just Nick and be like, hey man, how's it going? Oh my god, I can't believe.
But, no, we're good. Thank you so much for coming on today. And where can we send people so they can check out your game and be ready when it actually is out?
Oh yeah, so all of my information is on BackpackUniverseGames.com. Like sign up for the newsletter, subscribe, it costs you nothing and you gain all the benefits of it. You can email me, email my company at BackpackUniverseGames@gmail.com. And like, yeah, poke me, keep pressuring me. Yay. No, I need this game now. It should have been in my hands like 2 days ago. What are you doing? I'm sorry. Wait, you can also follow me at Backpack Universe Games, Instagram, and Backpack Universe Games, Facebook.
Awesome. Well, you heard there, folks. Be on the lookout.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.